You're listening to the Weekend Sport Podcast with Jason Pine from Newstalk ZB.
This week saw us tick past 100 days until the Paris Olympic Games. New Zealand will be represented by around 185 athletes at the Games, competing across approximately 22 sports. The Games run from July 26 through to August 11. New Zealand chef de mission is Sydney 2000 Olympian and five-time Commonwealth Games medalist in weightlifting, Nigel Avery, who joins us now. Nigel, thanks for taking the time for a chat on Weekend Sport. How do you feel? What are the emotions with now less than 100 days to go until Paris?
In a word, pretty excited, really, as most of the people you speak with are when you ask that same question. Yeah, it's certainly getting towards the business end, and yeah, it's extremely exciting. You know, we've obviously as a leadership group and the advance guard have got less than 100 days because that's the opening ceremony date. But yeah, it's going to go quickly too, as it always does.
I bet. So what are the key milestones for you and your team to hit between now and when the games begin?
Yeah, there's a couple of key things. One, it's called a pre-DRM meeting. And so that is where it's called a delegation registration meeting. And this is a pre-meeting to get things sussed out for the actual registration meeting, which is the day we move into the village, which is 5 days before the athletes do. And essentially, it's declaring your team, who's doing which sport, where they're located, all those sort of things, which weight class, which, you know, all that sort of carry on. And, you know, to give you an understanding, some of the bigger teams, like, it will take them 6 to 8 hours to go through this process. So for us, it'll be a number of hours, and it's a really, really important meeting to get right, because if you don't, you know, people might find themselves either not in the sport or in the wrong one. So they're two really key things.
Absolutely. Tell us about the Olympic Village. I'm sure that you don't just sort of rock up there and put your stuff down wherever you like. How does that all work out? How do you secure your space, and what's it going to look like?
Yeah, so that's a process that's been going on since 2018, when the organising committee decided that, hey, they want to try and reduce the number of people there, and the whole lot of arrangements they made around that. And we were part of that. So some of our sports have opted out of the main village to be primarily performance focused, to be closer to the competition venues. So, you know, canoeing, rowing, cycling, equestrian, golf are those sports for us. And then the rest of the thing, it's like this massive Jenga puzzle that the organising committee's got to try and figure out. Like, first of all, you know, 6 years out, what does your team size look like?
Yeah.
And so as you're closer to get, obviously you start getting pretty well defined and closer to where you think. So we get allocated a choice of different areas in the village. We have a look at them and say, yep, that's where we want to be. And then once you've identified those specific locations, then you go, well, here's what you want to happen inside those locations, whether it be false walls included or excluded, as the case may be, you know, apartments that, you know, were set aside by the organising committee as accommodation. We said, well, actually, we would like to run operations here, like our medical rooms would suit really here. So let's take out those walls and put in power plugs, fridges, and sort of try and tee it up. So when we walk in, all we have to do is dress it for New Zealand and put our branding up.
Does New Zealand have a medal target?
The New Zealand Olympic Committee doesn't. I think High Performance Sport might do, so you'll have to ask them about that. So our goal is to provide an environment where every athlete that travels with the team has got the best chance of optimising their performances on the day. And so clearly, you know, we're going to have, and we're cautiously optimistic about our chances, but there's going to be successes, you know, across the board, I'm sure. You know, some of the key sports, you know, the rugby's and, you know, cycling, athletics, you know, rowing, you know, clearly, canoeing. But just like every other nation is sitting there 100 days out, thinking the same as we are about the chances of their athletes, everybody's going pretty hard. And so in the sort of quadrennial cycles, there's ebbs and flows of talent and strength. And, you know, I guess if we can just focus on getting athletes there in the best possible shape, creating an environment where they feel really nurtured and wanted, and they see a real true sense of belonging and they're happy, then they've got the best chance of succeeding. And so whatever comes of that on the day, you ask me in 116 days and I'll tell you.
Indeed. So your main measure of success is more tied to the environment you create rather than what that necessarily spits out the other end in terms of medals. Your work is around the environment within which your athletes will function when they're in Paris.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's something that we can control to a large degree, right? So we can make sure that, you know, we're around to lug bags for people and you know, put smiles on people's faces and, as I said, make them feel like really welcomed into the team. Because if an athlete is healthy, you know, physically, you know, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, they feel happy, they're in a great space, the chance of them competing better or as optimal as they can is far greater than if they didn't feel so good. And so the idea is, you know, we can, you know, to a large degree help control that, whereas, you know, what we can't do is run onto the field of play and help them in that regard. That's up to them, and all the hard work that they've done leading into this, you know, goes towards that. So it's one of those things, you know, we tell the athletes, you know, control the controllables, you know, acknowledge that things, you know, might pop out that's different that you've never encountered before, but you just got to control what you can control, and the rest will happen. As long as you've got an intense desire to do well, you know, we'll be proud of them, you know, whatever the result happens.
Who chooses the flag bearer for the opening ceremony? Is that NZOC?
Yes, it is. So I have a pretty large part to play in that, along with a few others. And so, you know, we start sort of thinking about that sort of now, really, because, you know, the people we ask, you know, they've obviously got plans, and, you know, those plans may not be to have shown up to the village on the 26th to, you know, to be part of that. So it's a, you know, looking back on my, you know, Birmingham experience and, you know, making those couple of phone calls, it was one of the highlights, you know, the respect to which and the honour of being asked and then accepting, it was huge and palpable, and just really shows, you know, the importance that athletes place on being part of the New Zealand team. They just love it, and particularly, you know, those who ask the, you know, those honours, you know, even more so.
Yeah, I bet. I see the opening ceremony for Paris is the first to be scheduled outside a stadium. Boats are going to carry athletes about 6K along the River Seine. Big, big crowds, up to 300,000 watching from the embankments. Now, I see French President Emmanuel Macron said, look, if this is too much of a threat to security, we might take it to Stade de France. Are you happy with the intel you've been given around security of the opening ceremony and the games themselves?
In a word, yes. So we have two embedded security officers, security liaison officers, you know, kindly provided by the government to help us. They'll be wearing our uniform there, right in there amongst it. You know, their job isn't to run around, you know, catching people who've stolen, you know, a couple of popsicles. You know, their job is to liaise with the Games Organising Committee security outfit, obviously, you know, the French themselves and also other nations that we are friendly with. And so the idea of that is that any chatter that they hear or news that comes about, we get informed of pretty quickly. As far as the opening ceremony goes, yeah, it's quite bold, isn't it? And what an amazing spectacle, you know, should it turn out to be the case that it goes ahead there. But there's something like, I think it's 35,000 police are going to be around that area for that opening ceremony. That's, I believe, more police than the entire New Zealand police force.
Mm.
You're going to supplement that with army and private security and whatnot. It's about 70,000 total. So I'm kind of thinking that's probably going to be one of the safest parts of the world to be at the time. You know, there's a no-fly zone over the area and all that sort of stuff. So I think you've got to, you know, rely on the judgment of the officials there. And you know, if they believe there's a threat, then they will make those decisions accordingly, and we will go along with that.
Yeah, ambitious, but yeah, spectacular if indeed it does go ahead. Do you expect the unexpected? Did you learn that at all in Birmingham, that things happen that you don't expect to happen, you know, that you have to deal with in your role?
Yeah, I think there's a fair bit of that. I mean, not having had experience in that position before, there's a lot of unknowns, and you don't know what you don't know. You can't learn what you don't know. And so, you know, the experience of it was pretty amazing. And I think probably one of the things for me was the difficulty in planning, you know, trying to get around to support all the sports there. There was 22 sports in 11 days, and it's pretty easy math, right? And so that, my first day. Like, right, let's go to the men's gymnastics. And we get there, and they'd be moved to the afternoon. Like, all right, so there goes that one. But look, there's always things that pop up. But look, I've got extreme confidence in the NZOC team and the wider performance support group. There's about 50 people, so that ranging from, you know, sports medicine, sports science, you know, preparation, recovery, the communications team, all of that stuff. And the heads of those functional area groups, they're very experienced, and we have a quite a rigid process of if something pops up that is not an easy answer for, we get together pretty quickly and figure that out.
So when do you land in Paris? Games start around 25th, 26th, I think a couple of sports get underway before the opening ceremony. When do you touch down, Nigel?
Yeah, I think it's the 10th or the 11th. So we have that big DRM meeting on the 12th, I believe, and yep. Our access to the village, which is 5 days before the athletes could show up, what village opens is on the 12th or the 13th. So, yeah, it's all go.
It is going to get here quicker than you could possibly imagine, I would assume. Hey, yep. Nigel, thanks for taking time for a chat this afternoon. Exciting times for you, for everyone involved in what I'm sure will be a spectacular Olympic Games in July and August. Thanks for taking the time for a chat.
You're welcome, Jason. And look, thank you very much for your interest and also for your listeners. You know, the support that we get from the New Zealand public, we do feel it, right? So, thanks everybody for your support, for cheering us on in July and August.
Yeah, terrific stuff. Thanks, Nigel. Appreciate your time. That is Chef de Mission of the New Zealand team for the Paris 2024 Olympic Games, Nigel Avery. Those 100 days are going to rush past, aren't they? Nothing like an Olympic Games. Over 180 athletes already confirmed. Others will be added. Speaking of which, there's a young Cantabrian by the name, no relation to Nigel Avery, by the name of Cameron Avery, who tonight in Vienna, tonight New Zealand time, will attempt to go under the qualifying mark for the marathon. He's only ever run one marathon before. That was in Shanghai at the back end of last year. He ran a pretty good time, still significantly outside, though, the qualifying time for the Olympics, or the automatic qualifier, where they say, okay, you've ticked that box, we'll put you forward as a potential participant in Paris. Anyway, he's in Vienna and going to take our call sometime before the end of the show. I want to find out, you know, when you've only done one marathon and then you've got to go out and try and beat an Olympic qualifying time, how do you even prepare yourself for that? And what was it about his first marathon in Shanghai that made him think, you know what, I can carve 3 or 4 minutes off this time and qualify for Paris? Cameron Avery is with us after 2 o'clock sometime here on Weekend Sport.
For more from Weekend Sport with Jason Pine, listen live to News Talk ZB weekends from midday, or follow the podcast on iHeartRadio.